Good morning.
Good morning.
Rainy days and sunny days, it's good to see you, good to be with each other. It's good to spend these moments noticing our lives, noticing our shared lives, noticing that this life is sweet. I say that, and I know that you may be here today with a wounded heart, a grieving heart, a searching heart. And that is true, too. And we gather to affirm on this Sunday, like all Sundays, that it is a gift to be alive, a gift to get to figure this world out, a gift to get to figure out our own hearts and minds. It's not an easy gift, but it is a gift with green and kindness and chances to be generous, a gift with breath and starlight and laughter. Welcome to the sweet gift of this day. Jim and Lynn Schlau will light our chalice this morning while I invite you to say the word. And I invite you to speak the words of our covenant, which are printed in the order of service. Love is the doctrine of this church.
The request is the sacrament, and the service is the prayer. Love together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve humanity in fellowship, to respect the nurturing power within all of us. Thus do we covenant.
Please join me in singing this song for Mother Earth, this pretty planet. We will let our young people and their leaders go out to Young Church, and we'll sing them out with simple gifts. The reading this morning is a piece written by a mother who lives in Vermont, and you have the title Super Babies Don't Cry. Her I of course we'll talk about it this morning, but I do encourage you to go and read it, even if you didn't try to have a super baby. Her first daughter was born with a chromosomal deletion, which is to say a little bit of the information that she needed to be a, quote, normal person was just not there, and so some of the things that usually happen didn't happen. And they figured this out because she was born tiny and stayed tiny, and she had trouble feeding from the very first. So once that they figured out that one of her chromosomes was missing part of itself, they tested everything to figure out how well she could swallow, because her particular problem sometimes meant that the children never swallowed well. But this little girl swallowed just fine. And they said she might never learn to speak or walk, although it turns out that she has. But they had to go through a whole process of figuring out who she was and what she could do and who they were going to be as parents, given that they'd started out trying to have a super baby. When their little girl was about a year old, the family went to a conference that was just for people who have children or who have family members with this particular genetic glitch. And this is what the mom said about being at that conference. At the conference, my husband and I got the chance to talk with Amy Calhoun, one of the doctors who was present. "How does this happen?" I asked her. And I was not just hoping for a more detailed explanation of chromosomal deletions. I was secretly hoping to destroy my self-blame. "Chromosomes don't get passed down in their entirety," Dr. Calhoun said. She was sitting on a hotel bed while Justin and I occupied nice chairs. My husband was holding Fiona, their daughter, to his chest. Dr. Calhoun explained that in order for a person's chromosome to pull from a smorgasbord of ancestral chromosomes, reproductive cells undergo a tricky little dance called, now is it meiosis or meiosis? Meiosis, thank you. Chromosomal pairs match up and intertwine. Dr. Calhoun raised her two index fingers and pressed them together and then wrapped them around each other like snakes. The chromosomes get tangled. They get stuck together. And then, in biological craziness, they rip apart. "You can see the issue, right?" said Dr. Calhoun. I nodded. "Anytime they rip apart, there is a risk that a chromosome will have a deletion or an addition." I was shocked. Every human on the planet was a result of this makeshift process. It seemed like a miracle that we were all mostly symmetrical beings. But Dr. Calhoun said that the process is vital because it maximizes diversity. This way, each person is 100% unique. This way, some of us are immune to lethal plagues. Some of us are tall, and some of us are short, and some of us are fast, and some of us are slow, good with numbers, allergic to wheat, nonverbal, uber social, flatulent, fierce. Biology wants a wild mix. I can still see Dr. Calhoun's two index fingers intertwining and untangling. And in that moment, a new idea presented itself to me. Perhaps the point of life was not to achieve some kind of perfection. Perhaps illness was an integral part of life's dance. Perhaps fragility was built into our very design. Perhaps fragility was also strength. Through the neutral lens of science, my kid's genetic deletion was a product of diversity. And who could be upset about that? That night, I danced to a live funk band with my daughter's peers. sweating fiercely on a dance floor, holding the hands of a grown woman who was several inches shorter than me, a woman who didn't speak words, but had an excellent sense of rhythm. We make this time of joys and sorrows to honor the wild mix that is our lives, the sweetness that is unfolding, the sorrow that is sometimes step in step with the sweetness. And we offer each other a little bit of that love by listening, being present, hearing the quietness, knowing that not everything can be spoken. And if you do have a joy or a sorrow this morning that you would like to share with this listening congregation, come and stand with me up front and we will listen.
Good morning, I'm Doug Stevens. When Dave Mikkelsen and I send out a news flash and request for periodic work days, we really don't necessarily know what we're going to get. yesterday was that day, and ranging from people being on the roof dismantling the chimney over the parsonage to repairing electrical outlets, replacing light bulbs with LED bulbs, mowing the lawn, raking, trimming the shrubs, rebuilding one of the signs out front. Nine people showed up, and it all got done, which is my one joy. I have another joy. Jim has come back from the Northwest to take over the job.
Good morning, I'm Jane Oldfield Spearman, and I'm just wanting to kind of follow up on what you said, Doug, and notice the beautiful flowers, the yellow tulips that are finally blooming out front and in front of quite a few other churches in town, and it just gives me such joy to see those. And it, as many of you know, we planted the yellow tulips all around town for a hope garden to remind those of us who have loved ones or who ourselves are struggling with depression or other forms of mental illness that a new day and that the spring does come, that there is hope. And I've been waiting for them to come up and they're there, and I hope everybody notices. And I want to thank the amazing gardeners in our church who stepped forward back on a very cold and rainy Sunday or Saturday in November to put those in the ground while we still had time. And it's just lovely to see them. Thank you, Kendra, too, for your letter to the editor about it.
Hey, how's it going? Steve Hayes. My joy this week is families. Yesterday was my niece's first Holy Communion, and you know, so I went down to church down in Reading, and my son came in and he's kind of looking around and looks up on the altar and goes, "Looks like Dad hurt," looking at Jesus on the cross. Yeah, my family had about the same reaction. And I'm like, yeah, he doesn't need, okay. But anyway, you know, we went through the whole thing and had to explain a few things to my son. But afterwards, we went back to my brother's house for, you know, getting together. And I come from a very big family, and my wife always looks at me and my family. She's like, politically, how did you end up here? I'm like, I don't know. But we always have our spirited discussion of politics and religion, which now, again, that means this has a different aspect to it in my family. And when the old folks came in, it's always Ireland. But at the end of the day, you know, no matter what, we're shooting back and forth at each other, and we realized we're family. And I was kicked back yesterday, and looked at it and goes, yeah, we have a family, and it's a good family. And today, you know, we're going to be seeing our families in one way or another, hopefully. And I think that's a joy.
I'm Dawn Huebner. I have a joy and an impending joy. So my joy starts with a bit of a story. I'm a very deliberate, goal-oriented person. Anyone who's ever been on a committee with me or anyone who knows me knows that I like to make plans. I like to know how things are going to turn out. I don't leave a whole lot to chance. But there have been two very notable exceptions to that. One was about 22 years ago, when I was living in the Midwest and decided to sell my house, quit my job, and move to Exeter without any guarantee of an income, simply because I had visited here and it felt like the right thing to do. And I just made this incredible leap of faith, and it did turn out remarkably well. The other time I did something pretty uncharacteristic for me was about 2 years ago, when I placed an ad in OkCupid, and shortly after that received a message that in some ways scared me, but also intrigued me, and responding felt like the right thing to do. So I did, and it led to my meeting Lisa, which has just been a profound joy. And my impending joy, you're going to get to watch unfold. I've recruited some friends to help me, and there are signs that you're going to see popping up around the sanctuary. So you can watch the signs, and I will narrate them. And here goes. Elizabeth, Hillary Bunker, also known as Lisa, you have made my life sweeter and more meaningful. I love you always and always. Will you marry me?
Supposed to have meditation time now. We better skip it, just move on to a toast. So in this moment when just might pass around the Kleenex box, I hope you can soak up some of the love that is overflowing here this morning. And my wish for everyone in this congregation and everyone is that you'll get a little dose of the reality that you, every one of you, is a blessing, and it matters that you are alive today. On this day that is always a tumble of feelings, may you get a breath, a moment, if not an hour or a whole day, in which you can feel in the center of your being that it is a blessing that you are here, that we share this sweet life together. Let us try to be quiet together for a few moments. The author of Super Babies Don't Cry is a person who started out her life in one direction and then spent most of her adult life figuring out how to love truly and fully, which is good work. She describes growing up in a household that taught a particularly intense version of the idea that what you think creates your reality. In her childhood household, every physical ailment was caused by a thought or an emotional pattern. If you just thought the right thoughts, things would get better or not happen. So bad things that happened were really your fault. You were just thinking the wrong things. We know there is a powerful mind-body connection, and we also know that the world is more complex than we can begin to comprehend, and that it is very unlikely that one person's thoughts can be the singular thing that shapes what happens in their life. They had a book in their household when she was growing up that listed all of the ailments that a person might have, and then described the emotional pattern that you needed to clean up in order to get rid of just about anything. Well, the author slowly came to realize that this think better, be better way of going at things was all a way of trying to say that it was possible and important to control everything that was happening. That this arrangement was really an attempt at avoiding the shockingly painful reality that our lives, our health, our relationships are ever-changing and fragile, and ultimately beyond our control, from conception to our last breath and beyond. The author says, "With my woo-woo belief that the mind could control the body, I pushed disability away. I had done this by subscribing to the belief that disability always had an avoidable cause. I'd believed that I could control the body because I could not stomach the truth that the body is fragile, ephemeral. I had not realized this about myself. I had not realized this about my parents. I did not see our adamant devotion to vitamins and affirmations and organics as fear-based, as an attempt to control the uncontrollable." I think mothering is a particularly poignant exercise in this experience that all humans have to contend with, that we cannot control these lives. We can only love them. We expend huge amounts of effort into controlling them trying to avoid the pain of loss and uncertainty. Huge amounts of effort. But if one was going to trade control for love, to accept that we don't have control over how things will begin or how they will turn out, what would it look like to go toward things with love? I know this is a conversation that people have been having for as long as people have been conversing. So this is my best articulation at this moment in my life of what it means to love someone or some being. I think there are three pieces. The first is presence. And I mean being with. Actually being with. It's the reason for the traditional Protestant wedding vow, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. And it means seeking to see the other person or being in their fullness, to witness who they are. This is the part of loving that sometimes looks like sitting still and watching. Whether it be watching the full moon rise out of the ocean, listening to a friend's voice, watching a child climb a tree or walk the graduation stage. It's noticing them, whoever the being is, just as they are, without alteration or comment. That is what the author of Super Babies Don't Cry had to learn to do with her daughter. She knew she wanted her daughter, and she had to figure out how to let her daughter be just exactly as she was and be fine, even though it wasn't what she had planned. And then there is a much more active part of loving. I call it tending. This looks like making breakfast for your family and for yourself. This is taking the animals to the vet. This is putting solar panels on your house to help the earth. Tending is about noticing. Tending the actual needs of the beloved. The needs of the beloved and not one's own needs. And sorting those two things out is also a lifetime's work. As is sorting out what are actual needs and not necessarily the wants or the angry longings. My 4-year-old child wept this week because I wouldn't let him play in the car for a longer amount of time, and because his grandmother walked in front of him after he stopped and he was supposed to be the leader. Because he was almost certainly upset about something else and found these easier opportunities to express his upset. And so tending him didn't mean staying in the car all day. It meant noticing how he was and staying with him. Navigating all of that with children, let alone adults, is a long conversation and enlightening work, although difficult. And I think finally, love is about a sense of wholeness. The author of Super Babies Don't Cry says it over and over and over again, that her little girl helped her as a mother and simply as a human being, helped her to become free of old confusions about what was good enough, about what was her fault. Her daughter helped her get to her deepest self. And then she was able to meet her child just as she was. So then the mother felt more whole in her own being. There wasn't part of her that was sort of sectioned off over here. She was whole in herself. And then the two of them together were more whole, more seen, more tended. Living life connected to her child let the mother put her life in a much larger perspective, with a much larger kindness. One of the stories that she tells is that one of the many effects of this chromosomal deletion is that her daughter's spine didn't work out quite right either. Some of the vertebrae were sort of triangle-shaped instead of the usual shape, and so, of course, her spine goes like this, and it was so upsetting to the mother that she couldn't stand for a couple of years to give her daughter a bath. She couldn't stand to see that evidence of the difficulty that her daughter had. After a few years of her own work, the mom got used to it probably and also came to understand that she couldn't keep her distance from the difficulties. She says, "The world is a terrifying place. We manage it by believing we can control it. And when it hasn't been controlled, when it doesn't bend to our wills, which it doesn't from time to time, we either look for something to blame or we surrender." Surrender to the wild diversity, some of which is gorgeous, some of which is painful, all of which is surprising. I can testify that mothering is an exercise in not trying to control this life, in learning to just love it, be present to it, tend it, knowing it will grow in its own way, and in all of that find a deeper sense of my own wholeness and wholeness in the world. But I want to be clear that that wholeness that I'm talking about is not some, oh, now everything is okay sense of wholeness. It's not just a big round apple pie. It's a wholeness of everything being connected, of the pain being part of the story all the time, which means that wholeness is very hard. It is the wholeness of knowing that there is less and less that we keep our distance from. It is the wholeness of knowing that there is more and more that we are capable of, more and more that we can hold. That is how we grow into more loving beings, more spiritual people. This is the wholeness of being part of that wild diversity, being part of everything that is possible in the wild diversity. We have already had several important offerings today. Offerings of presence, offerings of tending and of wholeness. Every week we take up an offering, and we know that there are many offerings every week. Offerings of kindness, offerings of service, offerings of generosity. We always have candles up front so that you can offer a little light to this world. On this morning in particular, you may have a memory, a hope, some part of your own self you want to tend. So I invite you to light a candle for any of those things this morning. The morning offering for the wild diversity of this congregation will now be received. I bring the light of this chalice forward. Today, especially, it is a light of love, which I invite you to take out, shining into your days. Should we have one more cheer before we say the benediction? Please join in the unison benediction. The words are printed in the order of service. Go in peace.
Speak truth. Give thanks each day. Respect the earth and all creatures, for they are alive like you. Care for your body. It is a wondrous gift. Be gentle with yourself. Live simply. Be of service. Be guided by your faith and not your fear. Go lightly on your way. Walk in the sacred manner.